Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Tomorrow evening in the recital hall at the University at Albany, Morning Edition host David Green and NPR reporter Yuki Noguchi will co-host an NPR Family Matters event presented by WAMC and WMHT. Together with Michelle Singletary, a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and financial planner Luis Barajas, they'll tackle a number of topics like paying for college, buying a home, and saving for retirement. The event is free and open to the public, and David Green joins us now to tell us more.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It's good to be here.
And we're really excited to have you back in the region visiting Albany again. You were here last December, and you're coming back for another Family Matters event on the 15th. For people who aren't familiar with the Family Matters series, you've been hosting events in communities across the country since 2013. What was the inception of the series? What are the goals? Give us sort of an overview to start off with.
Well, a few years ago, we did a series on Morning Edition called Family Matters, and we were focusing on a real change sort of in the country. I mean, increasingly, multiple generations and families were living together under the same roof. So often you had, you know, what some call a sandwich generation. You know, people were taking care of their kids, you know, even after their teenage years, and also taking care of elderly parents, all living under one roof. It was happening more and more because people were living longer and because the economy was sort of, in a bad place, as we all know too well. And we focused on three families and really, I mean, just spent a lot of time with them and became part of their lives in a way, going back repeatedly to visit with them. And it just, you know, it really illustrated to us how everyone sort of faces difficult decisions that involve money, but also, you know, family and love and how to care for loved ones and what sacrifices to make. And so, you know, it was the kind of radio that we love to do. It was very intimate, where you got to know people. And we just thought this would be a wonderful conversation to take on the road. And so we started having events in communities where, we bring in a few financial advisors, and they're the experts, and certainly no one wants to take advice from me. But then, people can just come and talk about their lives, and, you know, there's empathy in the room, there's laughter, you know, we're all learning from one another. And I guess the best way to describe it, it's sort of, you know, if you listen to public radio, to me, it sort of feels like a story that you might hear on the air, but, you know, we're climbing out of the radio and sitting there in a room and just really having an organic, freewheeling conversation together.
How were the experts, the financial experts, selected to participate?
You know, we wanted to find people who, they're not wonky. We wanted people who can really speak in a casual way, at a very personal level. We didn't want people, you know, sitting on stage throwing out numbers and wonky terms. And I am the first one who can raise my hand and say, I have no idea what you're talking about, because I am not sort of steeped in financial language and so forth. So Luis Barajas and Michelle Singletary are, I worked a lot with them last year. They have this great rapport. They, you know, sometimes are giving sort of similar advice about things like when to buy a home, how much debt, if any, you should carry, what you should do about your retirement. Sometimes they give, you know, different advice based on their experience, but they're a lot of fun and just so engaging. And so when we started thinking about the events for this fall, there was no doubt that we were going to bring them.
As you host the event, what is your role and what do you learn? What do you like about doing these events?
You know, my role is just to foster conversation. The less I say, the better, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I just want people to feel comfortable and to talk as much as they want to about questions facing them. Because the more sort of detail and personal that people will get, you know, it really gives the room this intimate feel where I think people can sit there and say, like, God, I've gone through a really similar thing. So I want to get people to feel a certain comfort level and feel really engaged, like they're part of a conversation. What I'm hoping, you know, what I hope not to see is just me, you know, standing there with my NPR colleague, Yuki Noguchi. She's going to be coming with me for this one. And then Luis and Michelle, just the four of us talking. We really want to get, you know, a sense for the soul of the room and the community and really talk about what people who come to join us want to talk about. And that's sort of my role. And I have learned a ton. I mean, you know, every question that's asked, you know, I learn a lot. I mean, I remember these moments where people would say to Michelle and Lewis, you know, where do I find a financial advisor? You know, when do I need to go to one? And they would talk about, you know, just the fact that you're here in this room thinking through these really important questions. I mean, that's a huge step. And that means you've taken a huge step in terms of doing some financial planning. So, you know, that it makes everyone in the room feel good. It makes me feel good.
Have each of the events so far been unique because each participant, each community faces different struggles, or are they surprisingly similar no matter where you go?
I think it's safe to say, I mean, everyone has been different. I've been happy that they've been very diverse, you know, in all ways. So you have different ages, different genders, different races and ethnicity, different backgrounds, which has been fantastic because it's just added a real nice mix to the whole room. You know, in some places we, you know, would have a crowd that tended, you know, towards older. And in that case, we might talk about retirement decisions later in life. We might talk about how much money and gifts you might want to leave to kids and grandkids, health decisions that people might make after retirement. And sometimes, you know, the age tended a little lower and we might have spent more time talking about how to pay for college, college debt. Is it worth going to a four-year college? You know, what type of college is best for me in terms of my interests, and how much should I be ready to pay for it, and what is its value? So, yeah, I mean, it varied a lot based on different communities and what people were interested in, but I like that we sort of covered a big range of issues at each stop.
From listening to you on the radio, one can tell you're a journalist who likes to go out in the world to meet people like you do with these events, talking to people in their space, learning about their ideas. You're also a host and anchor, of course. How do the two aspects of your job inform each other? And when you're in the studio in the morning, do you ever wish you were back out on the road?
Oh, yeah. No, I do. I love my job. I don't want another job. And I feel really lucky to be in that studio each morning. I mean, every show is different. When I come to work, you know, in the darkness, yeah. It has to be something exciting that gets you going, and it really does. And it's such an honor and privilege to be able to sort of guide people through 2 hours of the day's news, and, you know, to entertain, to laugh together, to cry together, to really experience news stories together, you know, to follow our curiosity together. I don't want to be out all the time. I love being in the studio, but the more I can get out and talk to people and see the world, it's great. And that's one reason I think, you know, Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne, my two colleagues, and I, the three of us, really appreciate there being three of us, because, you know, there can be two of us in the studio on a given morning, and one of us can be, you know, visiting you, traveling, doing reporting, doing events like this. I will say, you know, it's one thing that's important to me, you know, even when I'm in the studio, if I'm alone in the morning and, you know, Renee is hosting from California, or if Steve and I are together and it's just the two of us, you know, I want to think about an image of someone, you know, actually listening, because I want to feel that connection with the listener. So I'll often, you know, I might think about my wife. I might think about someone I met, you know, out on the road when they told me that they listened to Morning Edition, you know, while they're making eggs for the kids. And, you know, they'll be standing in the kitchen, you know, over the stove, and the kids will be at the table kind of getting their backpacks together. And I'll have that mental image in my head. Or I might think about someone, you know, in a part of the country, you know, on the interstate, on the way to work and stuck in traffic and listening to the stories that we're doing. So I like having that image of listeners. So I feel like I'm not just in a studio, that I'm right there, you know, next to people.
You, of course, also have to be present and thinking about the person you are speaking with, the person you're interviewing. How do you think, if you can articulate it, you train your brain to think about the listener and the interviewee at the same time?
It's hard. I mean, I say this a lot when people ask me about radio. You know, it's listening is the foundation of what we do. And it's also so much harder than you think. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I'm doing an interview, you know, the distractions that are there are endless. You know, you've got the clock that you're worried about. You know, am I going to break through the zeros and annoy the heck out of my producers and colleagues, especially if it's live? You know, you've got your script that you sort of, you know, you came up with questions and thought through the conversation that you were interested in having. But if you pay too much attention to the script, and it's like, okay, we're talking about this right now, and what is my next question going to be? Suddenly you're not even listening to what the person is saying. And so to really just, I mean, zero in and focus your mind on what the person is saying, not think about the clock, not think about what am I going to say next, not think about what time it is and am I going to, what am I going to have for lunch and am I going to be late for that other meeting? You know, it takes a lot of energy, but it's so, so important. And I mean, our listeners, I think, know when they're hearing a conversation that's really organic, that's just sort of following along where curiosity is taking it. And I think they know when a conversation just feels, you know, either stilted or awkward, as if, you know, listening is not happening. And so I really owe it to our listeners to listen myself. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a lot. It takes a lot of energy, and absolutely worth it, but it takes work and practice.
Yeah, no, totally. You have to watch. Yeah, the time is for me, when I do interviews too, it's the biggest thing. The first minute.
Right? It's like that clock is going down. You're like, what's happening? Am I going to run out of time?
Right. Or also like, oh man, this is supposed to be 14 minutes, and I don't know what we're going to talk about for all that time.
But then usually that's the other direction.
It rolls and goes. Before joining NPR about 10 years ago, you were a newspaper reporter. Is there anything you miss about print journalism?
You know, it's two different kinds of writing, and I have totally fallen in love with radio writing. And I'll tell you, my colleague Don Gagne, who's our national political correspondent, he and I covered the White House together. When I came from the Baltimore Sun, he was just the most amazing mentor and friend, and taught me radio writing. I mean, I'll never forget. I mean, we were covering the White House together, and he would say, you know, even if it's the most straightforward story about a presidential press conference, you know, think about, you know, a piece for Morning Edition or All Things Considered being sort of like a mini movie. Like, what would be the opening scene when the credits were rolling? And, you know, it just took a different way of thinking. And so I've totally fallen in love with radio writing, but I worked on my first book pretty recently, and it was fun to go back and use muscles that I hadn't used. I went across Russia, and you know, I realized that sort of looking at things in a writerly way and not thinking about sound and where was I going to point my microphone and how would sound help tell the story, it was fun. And so I realized I missed that a little bit. But then I was really grateful to get back to my day job and start thinking about sound again.
You mentioned covering Russia and the White House. You've, of course, covered countless other heavy, newsy topics. But you also have the occasion through your job to get to interview the likes of Bette Midler, Dolly Parton, Chrissy Hynde. Is that a different muscle to flex when you're doing a sort of entertainment interview? I enjoy all of your work, but I love it when you do an interview for what I have dubbed your Diva series.
Like, I never heard that before. I love that.
Thank you. I was like, oh, I'm really enjoying David Greene's Diva series, you know, Dolly Parton and Bette Midler and everybody. Do you have
I'm going to use that if that's okay.
Oh, perfectly fine with me. Please, I'd be honored.
Cool.
What do you have to do to prepare for those interviews? Is it different because it is lighter?
You know, I would say it's the same and different, and I'll tell you why. And I hope you don't think I'm evading the question, but you know, it's a little different because you're dealing with someone who is so much in the public eye, and sometimes it takes, you know, an extra effort to break them down a little bit. You know, because they're often, you know, on such a tight schedule. And you know, I remember interviewing Dolly Parton, and I got the sense that I was maybe her 16th interview, like, in 4 hours.
Sure, of course.
And I think, you know, we started chatting, and she was sort of answering in a way that I could have imagined her answering the same questions from other people. And I could feel the moment when she realized, it was like, okay, this feels deeper. Like, this is not just going to be a, you know, a quick hit broadcast interview. You know, this guy actually wants to dig deep here. And you know, she just relaxed, and we had this wonderful conversation. So that's the way it's different sometimes. But it's really important to me to approach everyone on a very human level, and not to make assumptions about anything, and really to listen. And I hope that's what makes the interviews with celebrities that we do in public radio different than what you're hearing, you know, in other places, because I think when you treat someone just as another person that you're sitting down with and just chatting with, you know, that's when the surprises can happen. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up Bette Midler, because that was one of the really memorable ones, because I never thought we were going to sort of get to a moment where she was tearing up as she thought about her image in the world. And I got the sense that she was sort of struggling with whether she wanted to be seen as the divine Miss M or as someone who, as she put it, planted, you know, a lot of trees in the city of New York. And, you know, she didn't say this explicitly, but I really was getting the sense that she was really thinking about her image, and it was very important to her, and that maybe the divine Miss M was not the sort of one-dimensional image that she wanted. She wanted to make sure that her legacy was something different. And, you know, I left that room, and, you know, my mind was blown because I was overwhelmed to meet her, and I was sweating when I actually saw her for the first time and started talking with her.
Sure.
So, you know, you go through those fan moments each time. But then, you know, I just want to have a human conversation with someone.
David Green, we are excited to have you back in Albany on the 15th, and I thank you very much for your time today. It's been a real treat to speak with you.
No, it's been a real pleasure, and thanks for having me.
David Green is one of the hosts of NPR's Morning Edition. The Family Matters event at the State University of New York University at Albany will take place tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. The event is co-presented by WAMC and WMHT. To learn more, visit WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.